Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and our guest today is Diane Ehrensoft, PhD, who is the author with Michelle Jerkowitz of Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. Welcome to Writers' Voices, Diane.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, Diane is a developmental and clinical psychologist, the author of The Gender Creative Child and Gender Born, Gender Made, and the co-author, as we mentioned, with Michelle Jerkowitz of Gender Explained. At the University of California in San Francisco, she is the co-founder and director of mental health at the Child and Adolescent Gender Center and a professor of pediatrics. She has been featured on the Los Angeles Times Online, Wired Online, and has appeared on The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Today Show, and many others, I'm sure. Welcome to Writer's Voices. And tell me, Diane, how did you get interested in the field of gender?
I now go back to my childhood, and I think gender was always a thing for me as a little girl. It was, why can't girls do that? I had an older brother. And so very early on, I always had that question. And then I went to college, and I discovered that you could study this as something you went to college for. So I began studying gender in college, then in graduate school, and my dissertation was on gender in young children. And I just kept going from there. It's been a passion in all of my professional life, and I certainly tried to live certain parts of it in my personal life.
So we don't have to tell your age, but we will say that this interest certainly predated the current, what do you say, explosion of interest in gender?
I am perfectly happy to tell my age. I am the first of the baby boomers. I was born in September 1946, so tomorrow I'm turning 78.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm a little bit younger, although not a whole lot. And last weekend, my granddaughter asked me if I had dementia. And the reason she asked me is because I'm old. So she was concerned about it.
I hope you reassured her that you didn't.
Yes, I did. I'm like, why in the world would you think that? She goes, well, you have wrinkles.
Well, my story about my granddaughter that goes back into the book, because I actually reported it in the book, is many years ago when she was a little girl. I told her that when I went to grade school in high school in Chicago, Illinois, that we had to wear skirts and dresses. All girls had to wear skirts and dresses every day to school, even in a blizzard, even if it was below zero, we were required to wear skirts and dresses. And my granddaughter looked at her grandmother, me, in total shock, saying to me, Grandma, why didn't you protest? Which brought to me, we didn't protest because we knew nothing else. That's the way it was.
That is the way it was. And that was the way it was when I was in elementary school. But when I got to junior high, this would have been in the very early 70s, we were finally able to wear pants, but they had to be pants suits. They had to be matching tops and bottoms.
As if it mattered.
As if it mattered. And I have a kind of an interesting story to tell about my mother, who had some, I think she had rheumatic fever when she was a child, and she had some paralysis in her legs briefly. And then later, as she was recovering, it was still very painful. And she was living in Iowa. It's very cold in Iowa. Girls had to wear dresses, had to wear skirts. And her father, who was a local attorney and had connections, went to the school board and got permission for her to wear pants to school.
And to think that it had to be a special accommodation.
I know. I know. It's just, it is unthinkable now to us. And so are there things, and I know the answer to this, but are there things that now we just accept as the way it is that generations to come will consider that it was unthinkable that we had those restrictions?
Absolutely. And yeah. I think our stories, each of us from our childhoods or your mother's childhood, speaks to how history creates change, and that gender is an area of change that has always made people very nervous and anxious. For some, it made them very excited, like finally liberation. And for others, oh my God, the world is going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
So we
yeah.
see that right now occurring in 2024, that controversy.
And you've kind of put yourself on the firing line of this controversy.
You might say so. You might say there are times when I feel like I have a target on my back.
Yeah.
I will say that our clinic has, as many other clinics have, brought in extra security to make sure that we can do our work with safety. But I just recognize it as a time in history where gender is making people anxious. It's one of the reasons we wrote this book. To try and get anxiety up and compassion and understanding. I'm sorry, get anxiety down.
Down.
I slipped on that one because it's so hard to do. But we would like to get compassion and understanding up around the significant changes in what we call the gender zeitgeist.
What exactly do you mean by that, the gender zeitgeist?
In each period of history, there have always been critical moments where a new sense of the culture evolves. Sometimes it looks revolutionary. It usually is like a snowball that rolls till it becomes to a place that doesn't look like a snowball anymore. It looks like a big boulder. And around gender, I think we see it going back to the time when you could start wearing matching pants and go off to school. Something was afoot about gender, and it rolled around to the youth movement and the women's movement that exploded in the 1960s and civil rights movements before that about what are the rights of people. It went to the gay liberation struggle, and it certainly then went to the GLPTQI plus phenomenon that we have today, of that everybody should have a right to live in the gender that feels authentic to them and love and live with the person that feels like the best match for them. And that has been now crystallized, I think, into a new zeitgeist of gender, a new paradigm of gender that looks like a sudden explosion, but it's not. It's grown to be what it is today, that now looks different than it did in 1952 when I was wearing my skirts and freezing.
Yeah. It does seem, though, that I think that one of the reasons that people get so anxious about it is that even though we know, those of us who are older, there were always people who didn't really fit the gender norms, always. And but now it seems like there's a whole lot more of them. And it's hard for us to grasp why.
That is exactly why Michelle and I wanted to write this book, because it is hard for us to grasp what's happening here. That it should look like a sudden explosion. I would say more to the point, as we've given more permission for people to express themselves, not bound by rules and boxes, but enjoying what we call gender creativity, which is to go beyond those boxes and paint their own canvas of gender. And there's many reasons we've gotten to this place, but I believe we're here where gender is no longer bedrock, but it's now become moving boulders for many people. And for any of you who are hikers, it is so much easier to hike on bedrock than on moving boulders because you lose your balance.
Wow. Yeah. And yet it's exciting for people who in the past might have just suppressed everything. And now they don't have to.
Absolutely, Monica. It's not only exciting, it's life-affirming. It's also life-saving that sometimes these do become issues of life and death. Is this a life worth living if I can't be myself? And if other people judge me, ostracize me, or do violence towards me around my gender self? And so we call something gender euphoria, and we like to see that, that anybody could just feel really good about who they are. But there's also gender resilience and gender survival. And I think we're giving more people the opportunity to survive and celebrate both.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you do refer to quite often in the book is the statistics about suicidal ideation in transgender children and adults too, I'm sure. And how even if the parents and family, immediate family are accepting, it still sometimes isn't enough to save those children. That must be a really challenging thing for families to deal with.
It is one of the most challenging things for families to, on the one hand, let their children express themselves authentically for who they are. On the other hand, keep them safe.
Yes.
Safe from danger.
Yeah.
And we have to be realistic. There are some parts of the country or world where it isn't safe to go out and be who you are. So you have to figure out ways to make it safe enough that you can hold on to yourself while hoping the world will change and counting on people, particularly for children, to count on those adults to help make good changes, maybe some good trouble, as John Lewis said, to ensure that there isn't what we call gender minority stress or what I coined social gender dysphoria. That is the culture's confusion and anxiety about gender that makes them attack what they don't know.
It's just so hard to, like, when you have a child who's gender creative, like you said, you want to protect them and want it to be easier for them, and yet you want to accept them. So that's such a paradox.
It is a very basic paradox that every parent lives with that has a child that jumps out of the gender boxes in one way or another. One way is to say, you know, I'm not the gender you think I am. I'm another gender. Or to say, I don't like the rules for gender here. And I'm going to basically break those rules and do it the way it feels good to me. And those are two ways that parents are met with the challenge of, okay, if my job is to help my child be the best person they can be, but my job is also to protect my child from harm, what do I do if my child is going to school every day in a place that doesn't think the same way I do? What do I do if I'm in the state of Texas that has just made some laws that won't in the future let my child get some of the care that may keep them from being suicidal, that will help them stay buoyant about who they are? So I say to parents, this is one of the hardest struggles and one of the greatest beauties of being a parent of a gender creative child.
You're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Diane Ehrensaft, author of Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. Diane, tell us what you mean by the term, which I think you invented or came up with, the gender web.
It was me who made that up. So I will tell you the history. A long time ago, we had gender boxes, one for boys, one for girls. And along came this notion of a gender spectrum, where, like a color spectrum, you had two poles with an infinite variety of colors and shades and hues in between. And so we called it the gender spectrum. And I thought that was brilliant. I loved it at the time. But then I scratched my head and I said, well, actually, there's one thing that's missing there. It's got two poles. One is male, one is female. And there's still two boxes then at the end of the spectrum, a male box and a female box. And I thought, I think I'd like to break away from that. So I was actually beginning the writing of Gender Born, Gender Made, and trying to get my ideas together for the book. And I looked out my window where I was writing, and there just happened to be a spider's web right in a tree outside my window. There's lots of spider webs right where I live. And I thought, huh, I think that could work as a metaphor for what we're trying to put together around gender. And I say we, because there was a whole group of us thinking about this together at that time, which was beginning to coalesce into what we call the gender affirmative model. So within that, I saw this spider's web and I thought, by golly, I've got it. Why don't we have a gender web? Because it's three-dimensional and it will have three major threads, nature, nurture, and culture. And although that sounds simple, nature has a lot of sub-threads. Nurture has a lot of sub-threads. Culture has a lot of sub-threads. And if we take all those sub-threads and we spin them together, we will have every single child's unique gender web, every single adult's gender web, and no two will be alike. But the one thing that made it like the Twilight Zone is I had to add a fourth dimension. And I didn't know how to draw that or sculpt it. But the fourth dimension is time. Mm. And gender is not static. Therefore, one's gender web is not static. So who you are as male, female, non-binary, or anything else in terms of your unique gender web, or how you do your gender, whether you're just for an example, a boy who really loves nail polish and glitter, but knows he's a boy, or a girl who says, buzz cut, great for me. That may change over time. So that's where the gender web is, a three-dimensional concept with a twilight fourth dimension.
And I think that's one of the things that maybe concerns people so much is this idea that because it can change over time, what if somebody has medical interventions for something that was not a permanent, that shouldn't have been a permanent decision, put it that way, or that they later decided they didn't want to have been a permanent decision.
Monica, you hit the nail right on the head. That makes people really anxious.
Yes.
And for good reason.
Yeah.
Around any medical intervention, we always want to be clear before anybody engages in a medical intervention that it's the right thing for them. Can we know for 100% it will be the right thing over time? No. We can't know that for any kind of surgery, any kind of pill we take. So, yes, we have what I call the dialectic of gender. On the one hand, it can change over the course of time. On the other hand, for many people, particularly the gender identity, and that's who you are in your insides, boy, girl, man, woman, non-binary, some unique combination of gender, agender, for example, that may be very stable. And when it is, we want to support it in any way we can. So some children can know as young as two or three, you guys got it wrong. what it says in my birth certificate, it doesn't fit who I am. And they will protest in any way they can until they're heard. And once heard, if allowed to be the gender that they're articulating they are, and not just in one moment, but stably, for they blossom. And they stay steady with who they are. So we have, on the one hand, that, and the other hand, people who do change over time. So whenever we do a medical intervention, whether it be with somebody under legal age or over legal age, we want a team approach where everybody, parents, in this case, I'll talk about children, and professionals, all have their fingers in the pot to get it, somebody's gender web in focus, that person in focus, and make a gender health plan that's right for them. And we can't be 100% sure, but what I can tell you, the statistics do show, is the number of people who actually show regrets are tiny compared to the number of people who are leading good lives. And if you look at that tiny number, many of them didn't have that same let's all be a team thinking about it together before we just go forward and do something medical.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody would go into this haphazardly. Would they? I mean, it's like there is this tendency to say, oh, it's a people are following a trend, but it's such a difficult trend to follow in a sense, in that you're, why would anybody just do it for no reason?
that is the question. And the answer is, in rare occasions, maybe somebody might do it for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
But for the most part, people do it for the reason that they want to put together a gender web that feels like the one that fits them best, that they can live with and thrive in, rather than being tangled up in ropes that are tying them up and constricting their lives.
One of the things that's always puzzled me is that, because there's so much more freedom now to express yourself regardless of what your physical gender is. So, you know, I know tons of men who are very effeminate or feminine. I guess maybe effeminate is considered a derogatory term, although I didn't mean it that way. But, and tons of women who are very masculine and so why do you have to actually go further than that, other than just express yourself in that way?
Moni, that is the really important question. And maybe someday we're going to have a very different answer than the one I can give you in 2024.
Okay.
And I'm basing it on the gender web. And I'm basing it in part on the nature component. That there are, for many people, and I wish I could have somebody from the trans community right here next to me, because I speak from learning from them, but not of them. But there's many people who absolutely are very clear in the nature part that they are a gender that is other than what's reflected by what was between their legs when somebody stamped M or F on their birth certificate in our country. And they now know and have access to the ways they can put that together to live most buoyantly as themselves. And it's more than just putting on a dress, wearing nail polish, and wearing makeup. It's, I am a woman. I am not a man wanting to just break those gender expression rules. I am a woman wanting to wear makeup, nail polish, and whatever else, if that's what they want to do. And I want a body that matches that. And now medical advances have said, and I can do that. And when I do that, I will look in the mirror and see myself instead of some funhouse reflection back of a person does not reflect me. So I would never want to be in the place of saying to that person, oh, get over it. Just be happy. You know, be happy with the body you have and go buy some nail polish. That would be an affront to their sense of self, their sensibility, and their mental health needs.
Well, that's the crucial thing, isn't it? Because you want people to be happy. You want, and how does it harm someone else to let them be who they want to be? And I can say that partially because I am not particularly religious. And religion, why is it that almost every religion tries to enforce strict gender norms?
Well, if we say there's an essentialist component to most religions, and it's not every religion actually at all, because if we look in our own country, in terms of our own history, Native American spirituality left room for many genders.
That is
so one
right,
can
right.
Be
okay.
Spirit,
so you're right. It isn't every
God.
Yeah, it isn't
it
every religion. But most religions.
In certain religions. But yeah. I will give you my favorite quote on that to help us rethink it. So this was a child, age 4, transgender girl, had said by age 2, I am not the boy you think I am, please. It took a couple of years until everybody got it and said, okay, we got it, you're a girl. And this created a very happy child. And this very happy child was going to preschool, but in a very conservative part of California where there weren't many choices for the parents, both of whom worked. So they chose the really good preschool at the Methodist Church. And one day in the backseat of the car, this child said to her mother, Mommy, we learned something in school today. We learned that God created everybody in his image. So isn't God transgender? So perhaps we can rethink religion.
Yes, yeah. You're listening to Writer's Voices, and our guest today is Diane Ehrensoft, author of Gender Explained. So we talked about why you wrote this, why you and Michelle wrote this book. How do you work together to write it? Do you each take a section? Do you go back and forth? Yeah, what's your process like for that?
Here was our process, and I want to back it up, that before we wrote this book, we had worked for many years together as clinicians, as organizers of our mental health group as part of the Child and Adolescent Gender Center, as psychologists. And we came together for the first time as writers. We had never written together anything before. I've written several books. This is Michelle's first book. But I knew in my bones, this was going to work out. And my bones were never so right in terms of our process. So this is how we did it. We first talked together about what are our major goals in Gender Explained? What do we want to talk about? What do we want to get across? And of course, our publishers had certain things to say about that as well, and what they wanted to see us write, and they knew me, because I had published 2 books with them before, Gender Born, Gender Made, and The Gender Creative Child. Once we had decided the scope of the book and the main points we want to make, then we divided it up. And we did divide it up by chapters. And so each one of us wrote half chapters. And the other one volunteered sections into those chapters that we placed in them, and we very carefully edited each other's chapters. So by the time you have the book in front of you, you will find both our voices in each chapter. But so, the skeleton each belongs to one or the other of us.
Okay. So what is the structure of the book? What are the sections and kind of why did you choose those?
We decided at the beginning of the book, we wanted to set the stage by saying, Let's define our terms of where we're coming from so you know who we are. Let's talk about why people are so anxious about this very topic and what has happened historically that we got here. Then let's go into the nitty-gritty. What are we hearing from the kids? What are we hearing about and from the parents? What about this thing called the gender affirmative model that gets knocked around so much as either the best thing since white bread or a travesty? So let's see if we can tell you what actually it is. And then let's look at ourselves. First of all, let's look at some issues, like what's going on with sports, that's such a big deal. Who can play in what sports? What about education? What do schools have to tell parents about what their children are telling at school about their gender? And what about the controversy about medical care, those three areas in the larger culture? Then we wanted to bring it back in to all of ourselves, that we all have a gender, we all carry our own histories. Here's the work we have to do as a community, as a culture, particularly to help the children and families who are gender creative going against the grain. And then we wanted to finish it with, let's look to the future. Now, when we finished, by the time we finished writing the book, more and more states had bans on pediatric gender care. We actually had to do an update.
Wow.
Because it had changed so rapidly from the beginning to the end. We put this book to print in terms of our process prior to what came out of the UK, which was the CAST review, which created a great upheaval about gender care for minors. So we don't address that specifically in the book. That will be a sequel, I suppose. But the concepts are in there to help people understand what happened with that review. That was our process.
Why do you think so many laws have, there's been this rush to ban that? I mean, you've been working in this field for how many years?
The first gender creative child I saw was in 1968.
Okay. So a long time, over 50 years.
So.
Why so much pushback now?
Because I believe transgender children have been weaponized politically. They've been weaponized as something that people thought will have good political leverage for all the reasons we just said. Gender makes people anxious when you have a moment when it's changing dramatically. I think before, and it will be still, the target was anybody gay. And that didn't kind of work so well. So many people have somebody in their family who's gay that the attack on gays wasn't having the same leverage and muster. So I believe this has been planned for many years, and we were naive not to know that the shift among certain people was, well, let's target trans children. Everybody will get up in arms if they think that 8 3-year-old children are being castrated, that 7-year-old
which
children
isn't
are
happening.
Given hormones. Never.
No.
Never.
It's the same with the 9-month abortions. They're not happening either.
It's exactly the same. It's really on a spectrum.
Yeah.
These all fit in the same, let's go for these particular things that will get to people's nerves. Nobody wants to hear that a baby has been killed after birth, and nobody wants to hear that a 3-year-old has been castrated because they said, well, maybe I'm not a boy. It's never happened, and it never will, as long as anybody can make sure it doesn't.
Yeah, no kidding. On the subject, you talked about the gender web being part nature and part nurture. I think one thing that people don't understand is that there's several components to nature when it comes to gender. There's the genetic component. There's the physical, the genitals, the physical expression. And then there's the hormones. And that those don't always all match up in people.
Actually, it's less common than we think that they do match up. You know, I always use the analogy on that, exactly just that component, particularly there's the neurology. And there is not just the hormones, but the hormone receptors, which bathe our brains and actually begin to set in motion certain synapses and ways of being. So I will use an example from another sphere. I am left-handed. 10% of people in the world are left-handed. So we are definitely a minority. And anybody who's left-handed who tries to use the right-handed can opener will know our oppression. Things are made for right-handed people. But, and in many, historically, including in this country, and certainly around the world now, it's sinister to be left-handed. It is not a good thing. It is a bad thing to be hidden or stopped. But fortunately, history has changed so that I celebrate being left-handed, and I am a proud left-handed person. But I am a minority, and I was born that way. And I believe we can see that same minority in a small group of people, because it's not a large group of people, who basically say around their gender identity, oh no, that thing you thought I was because you looked between my legs is not who I am. So I am one of the small and the small percentage of people where my gender does not match what we call the sex designated at birth. So please celebrate me for that, like a left-handed person.
How prevalent are genetic abnormalities? Is it, you know, I've seen different statistics, 1% or 1/10 of a percent, or, but it, which is not okay. Nothing, which is not nothing, you know?
Yeah. The reason I stopped for a moment was we don't call them abnormalities, oh, we call them differences.
Okay, genetic differences. I'm sorry.
Monica, you asked the right question. There's binary, XX chromosomes, XY chromosomes. XX chromosomes, most likely people are going to see you as a girl the day you're born based on your genitalia. XY is a boy. Even that's not necessarily true.
Right.
But there are all kinds of different combinations of those letters so that we, again, have a spectrum of gender, not two boxes.
Yeah.
And so there are differences. And the worst travesty we have done to babies was to force them to be one or the other before they had their own voice in it by doing genital surgeries before they could consent to them. And it is still done in various places, but increasingly, historically, it's been protested against, organized against, and stopped.
Wow. Okay, so when this thing that people are so afraid of was happening, it was to keep people in a box or to put them in the box, to be not to allow them free expression.
Yeah, yeah, and nobody could imagine, and it takes some imagination, that somebody could have something that you couldn't quite tell if it was a penis or a vagina, or it might be a combination of both, and be quite happy with that.
Wow. You know, it's something that we don't talk about at all.
We don't, and I would call on the intersex community to talk to us about it,
yeah,
because they have so beautifully articulated their own experience, particularly those who weren't given a choice and have worked to make sure that babies today have the choice they never had.
Wow. You know, you mentioned sports, and of course, that's a hot button, which I don't really understand, because as you say in the book, before puberty, there really isn't much difference physically in terms of athletic prowess between boys and girls. Why do we even separate them? And I know, like here in Texas, when my nieces were growing up, they played on a mixed gender soccer teams until they were in high school. Even in high school, they played on mixed gender soccer teams, and nobody thought anything about it. I wonder if they're still letting them do that, or if now it's, if there's been a backlash against that too. You know,
in many states there has been a backlash, and it's focused on transgender girls in particular, with the belief that they have a heads up. All of the data indicates They don't, and they're not walking away with the gold medals. And not only in prepubertal children does it not make a difference, maybe in your foot size, but that's even that, probably not much. But there's a whole group of you who look like this. They were perhaps the kids who said when they were little, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. When they got to puberty and puberty started, they were able to get puberty blockers to stop a puberty that would have made them miserable, and that would have been what we call a testosterone-driven puberty. And so you get a pause on puberty, and when they're old enough, a bit later, they're given the choice. Okay, now which hormones do you want in your body? If they choose estrogen, they will be no different than any of the other, what we call the cisgender girls who went through puberty, have estrogen in their bodies. But in certain states, what they were trying to make as a rule is to show that you menstruated. Now, the first group of girls, the transgender girls who never went through a male puberty, will never menstruate. But they're girls. And the proposal they be banned. And you can imagine for any girl, I don't know who you were in high school, but if I had to prove to somebody that I was menstruating to be on a team, I'm out of here.
Yeah, really. No kidding. And there's girls who naturally, who are cisgender but don't menstruate till they're quite a bit older than normal, what's considered normal. So what about them? It's like,
Yep, the late bloomers.
yeah. Wow. Wow.
But
Well,
mostly there's no evidence base for this kind of discrimination in sports.
and really, what difference does it make anyway?
The kids.
It's a they're kids and it's a game.
Exactly.
Wow. I mean, they do. There's that's a whole nother subject we can get into, the pressure that's put on kids in athletics that just for that's just ridiculous. My ex-husband had lifelong health problems because of cutting weight for wrestling in high school.
Really?
Yeah. Lifelong.
Yeah, that was in my earlier book, Spoiling Childhood, was all the pressure put on children. Let's just take it off and let them
Yeah.
have fun.
Wow. But now this whole sports, this came up in the Olympics this summer. And do you want to address that a little bit? What these athletes were facing, and that's
It is the same thing. The accusation and guilty before proven innocent was that they were trying to get a leg up and they're just trying to get their legs moving into the sport. And it's an example of the social gender dysphoria and therefore the stress put, or what we call the gender noise that creates a lot of humming inside a person's mind when anything they do is looked at askance and they're just trying to live their lives, some as athletes, some as whoever they are, and they're being targeted as I said, trying to get a leg up and denying others their fair chance.
So I can't remember her name right now, but the rugby player who looked too masculine for some people. And she has totally stood up for herself. She stood up for other people who have bodies that don't quite fit what our expectations of a gender are, and has really succeeded. I think she's on going to be on Dancing with the Stars, and she's become a star of social media. I just love that for her.
I do too, and that's what we call gender creativity.
And she's beautiful. She's gorgeous. Well, Diane, would you like to read a little bit from your book for us
I
today?
would love to. Is there any particular area you were taken with? Because there's certainly I can read from different areas. I have some of my favorites,
Well, why
but
don't
I'm
you read
wondering,
from your
Monica.
favorites? Yeah, go
Okay,
ahead.
I will. I will. And I want to go back to what we're talking about it, what it feels like when something doesn't match inside you, and what we mean when we hear this term gender dysphoria.
Okay.
Okay, so I'd like to read from that. If you have never experienced gender dysphoria, we invite you to try out a little experiment. It is important to note that the real lived experience of gender dysphoria is highly individual and personal and cannot be fully captured here. Imagine that tomorrow morning you wake up and things don't feel right. Maybe you have breasts where there had been none. Maybe your genitals are completely wrong. Or maybe there is nothing different about your body, but something feels strange. Now, imagine you sit at the breakfast table and your family or housemate are referring to you as a different pronoun than what you have always used. And they refer to this body you're in by calling you he in the place of she or vice versa. You tell them they are mistaken and they look at you with confusion and concern. You try to explain that they are wrong about your gender, or perhaps clarify that you woke up in the wrong body. Perhaps their concerned looks begin to suggest they think you're crazy, even as they attempt to be supportive. On the way to work, you notice people stare at you on the subway. The barista at the coffee shop refers to you as sir or ma'am, again referencing the wrong gender. Everyone at work also misgenders you. You go into whichever bathroom matches your gender, or perhaps you find that neither the men's nor the women's restrooms match your gender, so you end up just picking one. Imagine that people in the bathroom give you a weird look, or someone even tells you to get out because you are in the wrong bathroom. No matter how often you correct people, the misgendering never stops. By this point, you might be feeling crazy. You are spending a lot of time and energy trying to figure out how to correct this misrepresentation of you. You constantly wonder, do I need to tell everyone my correct pronouns? How do I help people see me as I see myself? Maybe if I cut my hair differently or wore different clothes, or maybe if I changed my name to a more masculine or more feminine name, people would stop seeing and referring to me as a gender that I am not. How will I ever be able to just go about my day without always having to be reminded of gender and my own gender identity that is not recognized? If I can't fix this, how am I ever going to feel comfortable living in this world? We have invited you to engage in this experiment in order to demonstrate the importance of trying to imagine the experience of transgender and gender diverse people. This is important because cisgender people often cannot or do not imagine what this is like. And it is through empathy that we can begin to understand experiences outside of our own. The experiment hopefully conveys two points. First, that you continue to feel like the gender you know yourself to be, despite the imagined changes to your body, how others looked at you, or how they referred to you. No one could convince you that you are this other gender. Similarly, transgender and gender diverse people cannot be convinced to be any other gender, no matter how painful their daily experience. Second, the experience of being misgendered is distressing, and it happens countless times throughout the day. Consequently, a transgender or gender diverse person may frequently be distracted from attending to what is in front of them, because instead of focusing on work or school, transgender and gender diverse children and youth have to spend excessive mental and emotional energy on the simplest interactions with others, including the navigation of bathrooms. Additionally, these youth are distressed by how others see them on top of the already normal self-consciousness of adolescence. They may also worry about being socially isolated or even bullied at school. All these additional experiences and concerns that a gender diverse youth contends with are what is referred to as gender noise. This noise is typically generated from the external environment, which is persistently addressing the internal world of an individual. Sometimes it is a constant hum in the background, and at other times it is experienced as loud and significantly disruptive. Now add in all the complications of sexuality and dating, and imagine how all of this impacts both school performance and social interactions in a young transgender or gender diverse person. So how do we help children and youth with the distress of gender dysphoria?
And that was Diane Ehrensoft reading from Gender Explained. I don't know how any child can make it through without a really good support system, and yet some do.
Yes, they do, and we call it gender resilience. And we always forget to focus on the strength and the resilience of many of these children and youth, in part because they are presented with such challenges. And yes, the more support they have, the better they will do. The less support they have, the more challenges will confront them and the more mountains to climb.
So many young people have to face so many obstacles to being who they are. Do you remember Pat on Saturday Night Live?
Of course. How could we forget Pat?
And for those of you who might not know, Pat was a character who was gender ambiguous. Yes, no one knew whether Pat was, and all the other characters in the sketches were always trying to figure it out, and Pat always was able to block their attempts in one way or the other. And that's probably the first exposure I had to the idea of transgender. There have always been people born designated female at birth who've lived as men throughout history, and probably the other way around too. And occasionally you hear about them. And there was one in your book, a Roman emperor, I think. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about them?
And
so
even
it's not
now,
new. I'm just saying this isn't new. It's not new.
And even now there's a controversy as to whether this person was indeed transgender or was psychotic or was simply an adolescent, because they were only 14 and they didn't last very long as emperor. My own reading is that this was a transgender young woman. And this, there was enough indicators from Roman history as exposed that this person was saying, when I am a lady, and presented as a lady. And so we have that, we have a 14-year-old emperor who, and now they have changed the pronouns on the descriptors of this emperor to they, from to make sure they at least get it as gender neutral. I've always wondered if Joan of Arc was actually John of Arc. I've always had that wonder. I've read about it historically. I think it is possible. I certainly don't have historical documentation, but it's a question I've had for a long time.
Well, I think there are some documented cases of Civil War soldiers.
Those are real clear.
Yeah.
But they're not as famous as Joan of Arc.
No, they are not. They are not. When we talk about, we talk about cisgender, transgender, but there's a lot of other shades in this gender web. And I think a lot of people maybe don't really know what does agender mean, or what does gender neutral or non-binary, or, and are they all different, or?
That's a very good question. I want to preface it by saying what we underline in Gender Explained. If you want to know the answer to these questions, turn to the children. Because they are our leaders in this. They are taking this far beyond what we elders thought of originally to where it could be taken. So there are experts, but they're not the only experts. But it's, your question is a perfect demonstration of the gender web, of every person has a unique gender web. So even when we have these categories, it's reductionist, mm-hmm. because there's spaces in between. So, for example, in our clinic, there are several children or youth, adolescents, who say they're agender. But it means something different to each of them, so you have to go further. For some, it means I'm no gender, And why should there ever be a gender in society? Let's dispense with gender altogether. There is no such thing. That could be a gender. For the other, it means I'm any gender, a gender, rather than a being not. So there's just an example. Here's another example of just gender uniqueness. Somebody came to me and said, I am a gender smoothie. And I said, okay, yes. You take everything about gender, you throw it in the blender, you press the button, it moves, spins around, and you have me, a gender smoothie. So the one that's most prevalent right now as a category is non-binary. And non-binary often goes along with the pronoun they, which makes many people very uncomfortable because it's not grammatically correct in the English language. But what really makes them uncomfortable, I believe, is this new category of gender.
Yeah, and because we use they all the time when we don't know if we're talking about male or female.
Of course. Of
all
course
the time.
We do. And as a matter of fact, a non-gender, non-binary youth many years ago corrected me and said, what is wrong with all you adults? Have you not read Shakespeare? There are 535 references to they in the singular, so get over it.
Well, speaking of Shakespeare, males being female temporarily or vice versa is like in almost every play, I think. At least all the comedies, they are constantly changing genders.
Absolutely. Shakespeare was a gender bender, but we also have to remember another thing. In Shakespeare's time, only men could act on stage.
Right.
So men played all parts as well.
So you had men playing a woman pretending to be a man.
You might as well play with
them. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. People didn't seem to get too upset about that.
Yeah. We're not there to interview the audience, but I think, yeah, there were some women who were upset they couldn't act.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. But I mean, the whole, like I said, gender bender thing didn't, it was.
Absolutely. And that has to do with the different zeitgeist of gender. And, you know, I would say, and we talk about this in the final chapter of Gender Explained, that there have been moments in history where people get really anxious and go, oh, no. So, for example, when people first heard the world was round, not flat, they went, can't be, impossible. I look outside and I see flat. Don't tell me round. It just shakes up everything I know. We now all accept that the world is round. Then the printing press came and people said, oh, no, this is going to be terrible. No, handwritten manuscript, only thing that counts. Now we don't even read books. We read on a device. And we see it right now around artificial intelligence. Is this a wonderful thing? Is this a scary, awful thing? But there's been moments in history where we have strong objections to change because it makes us anxious and it defies what we know of the world. And gender in our culture has been a prime organizing feature. Why would we say before somebody has had their baby, do you know if it's a boy or a girl? We're already locating the identity of that child so that child is knowable to us.
Right.
And we can see what a shakeup it is when you go, well, we know the sex, but we'll have to wait till they talk till we find out the gender.
And it's hard for us to make that adjustment in our thinking.
Yeah, and it's not because it's hardwiring in the human condition. It's basically been decades and decades of socialization.
Yeah.
And therefore it becomes habitual.
Yeah.
And that's why it feels like bedrock. And so when it gets transformed to music, to moving boulders, we got to find those hiking boots with grips.
Well, Diane, I want to thank you for being with us today on Writer's Voices.
And thank you so much for having me. And I hope that I represented for Michelle, our book, well, because we're happy to have it out in the universe.
And that's Gender Explained by Diane Ehrensaft and Michelle Jerkowitz. And see you all next week.